Somehow the broadcasting industry survives despite losing all its definition. Broadcasting becomes narrowcasting. The economic base of advertising erodes. People listen to the internet, even watch radio, and somehow it all hangs in there. Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Today, a pair of old radio fossils compare notes on why they are not obsolete. Our number 1-800-478-8255 and Anchorage, a local call at 550-8422. Email talk@alaskapublic.org. Carl Castle's coming up on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. Avtech is recruiting rural Alaskans for computer and network training with no cost tuition for qualified applicants. For more about the Village Internet Agent Program, call 1-800-478-5389. This message sponsored by Avtech, Alaska's Institute of Technology. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Being a broadcast veteran myself, a veteran Pennsylvania broadcaster, it's always a pleasure to meet my veteran colleagues in the industry. And we have veteran North Carolina broadcaster Carl Castle with us today. Welcome to the show, Carl.
Good to be here, Steve. Thank you.
So you got into radio because you were in love with it.
Absolutely.
Before you ever walked through the door of the radio station, you wanted to be on.
Oh, my gosh. I was, before I could even walk, I think, I wanted to be on the air. That big box, remember the old days when you had a big thing for
you
for
could look in the back and the tubes were glowing away.
They glowing away, man. And listening to this guy and these people talk on the radio, I wanted to do that. My grandmother had a wind-up Victrola and maybe one or two records. I would get that thing wound up, and I would play one record and make up a commercial, and then play another one, then make up some news. And they'd go on and on and on. And my mother would run me out in the yard, time to go out and play. Spend too much time doing that. My dad would take me out on the highway outside of my hometown in Goldsboro, North Carolina, and take me to the radio station on the weekends, and I could walk in and see those guys work behind the glass. But what fascinated me was that little closet off the lobby where they had the teletype machine. Fascinating thing to watch all, as long as I could. So when I got to high school, we had a very fine high school drama department, and they had a class in radio, and so I took it. We were taught how to create images in people's minds with the use of sound and music and voice. So my career in radio was underway. We had a weekend news broadcast on the local radio station of high school news, and I got to read it from time to time. So that summer, I was between my sophomore and junior years. I was 16. They offered me a part-time job at the radio station, and they paid me. Couldn't believe it. Had to get workers' permit. I was so young to work there.
How much?
I got 75 cents an hour. But, you know, later on, the guy who gave me the job, the manager, he said, no, I gave you a dollar an hour.
Well, now that brings up a really interesting point. I think when you're a veteran in this business, you have developed the attitude as a professional that it's my job to do what the boss thinks he wants or she wants. It may not be the best thing, but that's what I'm paid to do, so that's what I do. So whether it's commercials for cigarettes or the game show that they think is going to be a big success, or broadcasting a parade from inside the parade so nothing goes by you at all except the crowd, whatever it is, you just kind of do it.
Yeah, they're correct. We do it. Whatever you say, boss.
Right. So it can lead into some cockamamie weird situations, and you can't be in this business for more than 10 years without starting to have a whole string of stories about all the weird stuff that has happened to you.
And a lot of weird stuff does happen.
Yeah.
Boy, maybe a record player doesn't work. Sometimes the tape machine doesn't work. Sometimes the whole business, the whole transmitter doesn't work. It goes off, and what do you do? Back in those days, and I'm sure you had one, a third-class license, engineer's license to operate the transmitter and make hourly readings on the meters and log them in. Oh, yeah, got that too. As a matter of fact, by the time I got to my senior year in high school, I was opening up our radio station in the morning, signing it on at 6 o'clock, turning the transmitter on, of course, before that, and working until about 8:30 when somebody would come by and pick me up and take me to school. But in the meantime, during that period, it was play music, it was crack a joke, give the time, give the weather, and read some news, and don't forget to read those commercials.
No. Yeah, mm-hmm. And the morning is extremely demanding.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be sort of a disciplined sort of personality. But that appears, Carl, to have been your main job security down through the years.
Morning work. It's the best time to work because there's nobody around to bother you. You can pretty well do what you want. Well, it morphed into other jobs as time went along. I went to college, worked at a commercial station to help pay my bills, and also worked for WUNC when it first went on the air. It was an educational station back in those days, not public radio, but educational station.
Wow, you know, they're still kind of a leader.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely.
Now.
That station is very good. I'm very proud of what it has become. And I, when they need something, they call me, and I go down and help them whenever I can. So I did that, and after college, I was drafted into the Army. And after 2 years, came back to my hometown and worked. Eventually moved
to Milwaukee. So you just got the, right after the Korean War, you didn't
pulled
into it.
I was between Korea and Vietnam.
Yeah.
2 years there. Spent part of the time, most of it in Italy, year and a half. So back to my hometown, and I worked there until I moved to the D.C. area in 1965 and was a morning DJ at a station in Alexandria, Virginia.
And you're even playing country music there, right?
Well, actually, they changed the format after about a year to country music. And we decided we're going to do this with class, not the hokey-type stuff, but with class. We'll play the artists, of course. And believe it or not, from time to time, if anybody was near, an artist was near, he'd stop by, or he or she would stop by and say hello and talk some on the air with us. So that was fun. Then I did a part-time gig with an all-news operation in Arlington, Virginia, and finally went full-time with them eventually. And there I learned a new profession called news. I read books about it. I talked to people about it. And it was quite something.
So you had no broadcast journalism degree or anything like that?
No,
you just
not
came
a bit.
In. You had to do the news in the morning shift in the radio, and it just sort of evolved into this, and all of a sudden it's all news station.
Yeah.
I better get serious about this.
I better learn something. To me, back in the early days, news, anybody can read the news, but it takes a person to entertain in the morning, and that's what I wanted to do. So news was not all that important, even though my boss back in my hometown would urge me to go out, or more than urge, tell me to go out and cover such a story that just happened and bring it back. So I did. But I got into a new career, and I began to like it, and I did that for about 10 years at that station before I went to NPR.
You know, a lot of people listening right now are probably absolutely horrified to hear the great Carl Castle just sort of fell into doing news.
That's right.
Not something he intended to do. I want to take you back to that country music thing.
Sure.
Because, you know, you probably even know the song that Bill Anderson does called The Country DJ, in which he's talking about all us disc jockeys, broadcast personalities. And he goes on like that. And it was like this deal of, we're not disc jockeys, we're broadcast personalities. But the fact of the matter is, personality is, to me, that's part of the remaining currency of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as I said in opening, everything that makes it an industry is going away. The advertising, the broadcast signal itself, it's all going away. And somehow what still survives, there's still a little bit of whatever it is. I would call it magic.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the need for good writing and good scripts. That's not going to go away. That's always going to be needed. People are always going to need the news. Mm-hmm. And personality.
Sure, sure.
It's when I was listening to the radio, when I first started, was no TV yet, and it was like Hopalong Cassidy. I lived for Hopalong Cassidy, Gene Autry, the singing cowboy, the Lone Ranger, and the weird reverb they had on the guns fire when it was in the canyon, and so many things like that. Radio that painted a picture in your mind. Inner Sanctum, if you got to stay up late enough. And then when the disc jockey became more of a dominant force, you had, they weren't just somebody that played records and you could dance to. They were personalities. Mm-hmm. They were real people. And it would be nothing without them.
That's right. Yep.
And then it sort of got formatted out of existence, you mm-hmm. know. The personalities went away for a while.
Things have changed over the years, yeah. No doubt about that.
But now
that.
They're back.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we have at NPR just a stack of personalities, people that are on the air. They do good jobs, and the audience likes them, from Bob Siegel on All Things Considered to In the Morning with Steve Inskeep on Morning Edition.
He's doing a great job.
Yeah, he's doing very fine. To any program we have. They have become personalities. And, of course, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we have Peter Sagal and all the panelists who come on from time to time.
Yeah. So what, it's been more than 10 years you've been involved with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah, right? We're on our 15th year on the air.
Phew. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a live show that they thought at the beginning was not going to be, it's as if live. It's an audience show.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it on Thursday, and it goes on the air later on. But originally they thought it was not going to be an audience show because we
don't do audience shows, and we did the program in studio. The program has always been produced in Chicago, so Peter Sagal was there, along with the production staff. I was in Washington, and the panelists could have been scattered anywhere from London to Los Angeles. And just brought in by a remote control.
That's thoroughly modern.
Oh, yeah. And it worked. Yeah. It worked pretty well. But stations began to think, hey, that would make a good show with an audience. Can you come here and do it? And we said, no, it's not made for an audience of people. We don't think it'll work before an audience of people. Well, this debate went on for a while. And once in a while, we would do it in Chicago before an audience. Yeah, it worked all right. But to get out on the road... Well, Salt Lake City kept pounding away, so we decided, all right, we'll go out there and do it once. We did, and it worked.
And the audience is enthusiastic.
Yeah, very enthusiastic.
Yeah, and they kind of need to be, because a lot of the show, if it's not improvised, it sure sounds it.
It is improvised, and we do have a script. The questions, and Peter has some of the jokes he wants to follow up with on a copy. I have a copy of it too. The panelists don't. They don't know what the questions are coming at them. They don't want to know either, because so many of them have done improv for years, and they're good at it. So that's the way we do it. And the thing is that over the years, the program has become so popular that even in Chicago, we're sold out weeks in advance. When we go on the road, you better get your ticket fast before when they go on sale. Otherwise, they'll be gone before you know it.
Well, I found it's interesting how creativity shows up at NPR has always fascinated me. As an advocate for local broadcasting, I tend to favor like the local stations, the local production with all its flaws and everything can encourage more creativity out of people.
Exactly.
So when you go national, you have to meet all these standards, a lot of production standards and so forth, and it takes a certain kind of survivalist to be able to do that. So it was amazing to me to hear that the same person that came up with Car Talk came up with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Well, it's about the same, almost the same format, because the car guys, I understand, they don't know what the problems are when they go on the air. And so it hits them, you know, cold. But they're so good. I have had mechanics tell me many times, those guys know what they're talking about. They're good at it.
Yeah, so, and if not, they'll joke about
they
it.
They will. If you got a family problem, they'll tell you how to solve that, too.
Yeah. So then the idea comes along to do a quiz show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
with personalities.
It was designed along with some other programs at the same time to be used on the weekend. We were heavy with news, you know, during the week. We needed something new on the weekend, so this quiz program idea came up, and we worked with it.
Yeah. So you were there from the very beginning.
From the beginning, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even in the old days when it was terrible.
He admits it, folks. And your job is real clear to anybody that listens. You're the straight man.
More or less. I do the Who's Carl, you know, and the limericks and anything else that comes along. And you have to watch it once in a while. Like, I get a zinger in there myself that I make up. And I like to think that I bring a little class to the program, a little dignity, because our motto is NPR without the dignity. That's wait. So it needs a little of that, so I hope that I have brought it to the show. But it's been so much fun for me for all these years to be on the show. And it's not work, it's just having a good time.
Well, it's very interesting, you know, because I was a disc jockey that BS'd my way into the newsroom, but I could be a news personality. Mm-hmm. So it was a little different. It was sort of a very short little period of time where we got to do that. Then they cut it out. But it sounds like you, in a lot of ways, a DJ that fell into the news business, got stuck in there. Mm-hmm. Would you get jealous of the people that were actually out there in the creative shop, you know, able to have fun all the time? And here you are, you just have to turn in your newscast every hour.
Not really. I enjoyed the industry so much just to be on the air. I don't care what I was doing. Just to be on the air doing something was, to me, every day a thrill. So doing news, fine. I'll do it. And I got to like it on Morning Edition and any other thing that came along. Early on in Morning Edition, by the way, I used to sit in for Bob Edwards when he was on vacation or went out of town or something. And I had a great time doing that. And I got to interview some nice people, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you have a distinct air presence and some technical skills, and I don't think they should be sold short. I sell them short, but the fact of the matter is, when I was a kid, just going into this business, my voice hadn't changed all that long ago, but I had the facility for getting the diction right, mm-hmm. for having a proper pace, and for being able to sell the copy in the sense that I had in my mind a picture while I was communicating. Mm-hmm. And I think those are all very, very basic things that aren't all that common in a business.
Oh, sure. I worked on my Tar Heel accent in the early days, very conscious of it. And I listened to good people on the air, both network and locally, and tried to imitate them in a way that the accent would go. But I go home to visit some friends or go down to Chapel Hill to visit WUNC again. And just listening to them talk, before you know it, I'm talking Tar Heel talk again. You see it, you kind of fall back into it. You know what I mean?
Well, you would, I would love to have heard a conversation between you and your cronies, Andy Griffith and Charles Kuralt.
Yeah, right.
I bet you all would just be wallowing in it like a bunch of molasses.
Oh boy, we'd have fun with that. Yeah.
Well, they're only going to be here as ghosts today.
Yeah. I should mention to whoever doesn't know that Andy Griffith did teach high school in my hometown when I was there, and he taught it for 3 years. He was he took care of the high school chorus and also taught some English and also some drama. And everybody knew him. He's a heck of a guy, and we all loved him. I knew through my contacts with people who knew him, that he had been ill for some time and really had a bad problem with his heart. So when he died, I really regretted it. I knew it was coming sooner or later, but we lost a good man and a good actor, too.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was wondering if he was involved with those amateur theatrics. You said he taught there at the school.
He did. He was in two or three of the high school plays from time to time. And he was a good actor.
He had the talent.
His wife, Barbara, was a very good actress. She was a good singer, good dancer, and just a good actress. And so together, they made a good combination.
And they had the business sense to team up and and parlay that talent into the a patented corn pone humor that was a very durable product.
Yeah, that record he made, what it was football. Yeah. Country boy, country bumpkin going to a football game for the first time, and he doesn't know anything about it, just what he sees and describes the thing. And I don't know, he says, exactly what this whole thing's all about. All I know is they pick up this pumpkin and they run from one side of the field to the other. And I think the idea is to go from one end to the other without falling down or stepping into something.
It worked.
It worked.
Okay, ready for some calls here?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Guest is Carl Castle. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. I haven't even glanced at the emails yet, but let's go to Bob. Joins the program from Anchorage. Bob, you're on the air with Carl Castle.
Good morning, Mr. Castle and Steve. Hi.
Hi. How you doing, Bob?
I reserve the respect of Mr. for him, not you, Steve. But you're both entitled. I have enjoyed over the years catching the New York Times in grammatical errors. I relish in sending them in early. It's really tough for you, though. For 30 years, you've been news announcer for NPR, and it's very, very difficult to catch you in a grammatical or stylistic issue. So I'm just wondering what style guide or other approach do you use to actually getting the text ready to read, and how do you make it so concise and so clear?
Well, I guess it takes years and years of practice to be able to do that, but when you're fighting a clock, you have to keep it short and to the point. And that's one thing that you learn early on. As far as the writing and the style, I've read several books on how to write for broadcasting. One of the best writing for broadcast news by, I can't think
Bliss.
Of his name now. Edward Bliss,
yeah.
Which is the best that has ever been written on how to write for broadcast news. So talking to some of the experts and listening to them and listening to our people, how they do it, I learned a lot. So I guess I kind of fell into it.
Bob?
And if I may, a follow-up, another master of conciseness and clarity in her field is Nina Totenberg. But to my knowledge, she's not even an attorney. Do you know her?
I certainly do, yes. She's quite a gal. She certainly does know her thing about the Supreme Court and all anything as far as the law is concerned. And she's been around for a long time. And you'll have to run her out of the building, I'm sure, when the day finally comes.
She's a bulldog. I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
As a reporter, she's a bulldog. And the other thing is, she has an absolute gift for. What you called clarity, Bob. She knows how to boil it down. You know, and this is something a lot of reporters have trouble with, which is like, how do I get this across to an ordinary person?
Nina's very good at that. Love that gal. She's very good.
She is. It's interesting. The New York Times also used to use Anthony Lewis, who was a non-attorney. He was, in fact, the only non-attorney law school professor at Harvard. There's something about the non-English majors. They're very clear in their expression.
Yeah. Bob, I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bob.
All right. This one from Gretchen, who comes in by email and says, Carl Castle, welcome to Alaska. And then wants to know about this show. She says, how do you enter the drawing with Wait to have my voicemail recorded by you if the panelists get the questions correct? and you mean the panelists often get help in getting the questions correct.
Oh, yeah. We do our best to win. Let them win because we want we want our listeners to get that prize. Anyhow, the best.
That prize.
Yes, whatever. You know, people ask me from time to time, who does the message on your home answering machine? It ain't me. It's my wife. She's not giving it up. I have a brother. I have a son and a sister. And don't even bring the subject up to either one of them. They don't want it. We've heard you all these years. But anyhow, if you want to get on the show, you have to make I think you can go to our website and email a request for that, or to call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT and listen to the instructions, and they'll tell you how to get on the program, and perhaps they'll win the prize.
So, Gretchen, thank you for your email query there. Email is talk@alaskapublic.org. Phone number 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. Whatever you wanted to know about Inside MTR, Inside Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We got the man here, Carl Castle. It was noted last night when we appeared to a large crowd. Amazing. I can't believe so many people would turn up to hear a couple of over-the-hill newscasters talk about the old days. I mean, it's incredible. Oh. We could talk about all the dead people.
So boring.
But there was quite the crowd that showed up for that. It was kind of flattering, really. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and Martin joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. You're on the air, Martin, with Carl Castle.
Greetings, Carl.
Hi, Martin.
And Steve. Longtime listener, Carl. I've been listening since the very early 70s to NPR, and I missed the first couple minutes of the show with your history, but I think I know most of it. And I have a couple comments and then a question. I grew up, well, let me say this, I spent the first 17 years of my life in Southern California. I didn't really grow up till I came up here, but I'm sure you might have heard this before, but, you know, I was kind of an early newsaholic in California during my teen years, and grew up listening to Tom Brokaw on the local, news, and you sound very much like him, especially with your voice inflection. Do you know Tom, and have you heard this comment before?
I've never met Tom, but I know his work, and I think he's very good. He's very good.
Well, you sound a lot like him, and I also listened to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and it's good to hear you lighten up sometimes. but I gotta say, as an Alaskan, now a longtime Alaskan, 40 plus years. Michael Feldman's show has been up here a couple times, and mm-hmm. the last time I was fortunate enough to be the home caller, and I won a case of beer, and I gotta say, I don't want to belittle your voicemail recording, but can't they have some real prizes on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? hang up and listen on the air. I'm just kidding, but a little bit.
I have been thinking about that myself. What I would offer some real prizes. A voice. Oh, my gosh.
Real celebrity.
Well, what happened at the beginning of the show some 15 years ago was the fact that we didn't have much of a budget to buy tote bags or coffee mugs or whatever. So I was asked to do this for a short period of time till we could afford to buy prizes to send out to the winners. And as I said, that was about 2,500 messages ago.
That's one of the secrets to success, is realizing you have a success mm-hmm. and staying with it.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it can be a hard-learned lesson. Martin's bringing up Tom Brokaw got me thinking about another role model who I hadn't named. And that was, I think he was Brokaw's, the guy before Brokaw was John Chancellor.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was just amazing clarity and diction mm-hmm. in the way that he could get his words out and maintain his poise.
I admired those guys, and I tried to emulate them.
Yeah. Our guest is Carl Castle, NPR announcer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and former newscaster at National Public Radio, now an ambassador at large, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Providence Imaging Center, providing diagnostic mammogram results to patients within one working day, led by Drs. Denise Farley and Heather Tauschuk, provimaging.com. Do you know a nonprofit executive or tribal leader who is at risk for job burnout? We'll nominate them for Rasmussen Foundation Sabbatical, which provides paid time away for personal renewal and growth. Go to Rasmussen.org for more information, but don't wait. Nominees must complete an application by October. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
It's Talk of Alaska, and our guest is veteran NPR announcer Carl Castle, now a roving ambassador for NPR, but still gets back to Chicago to do, wait, don't tell me. I guess so. You leave here today, and you got to do the show on Thursday.
I'll leave actually early evening tonight, and I'll get back to D.C., where I live, tomorrow about noon, and on Thursday morning, I'll catch a flight to Chicago, and we'll do wait on Thursday evening.
You're a jet setter.
Yep, I fly from here to there and everywhere.
You live out of a suitcase.
I certainly do.
Oh, wow.
But it's fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And visiting stations like here in Alaska, get to meet our listeners, talk to some of them, meet the members of the radio staffs. And for me, it's been fun.
Yeah, I'll bet. It was probably fun when Wait came up here, too. It was about a year and a half ago, I guess.
Yeah, we did the show in Fairbanks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll bet. They like their public radio up there, as I'm sure you found out. 1-800-478-8255 to talk to Carl. 1-800-478-TALK statewide. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. And the email is talk@alaskapublic.org. So when you're in this business for any length of time, everything morphs. I kind of talked about it in the introduction in the sense that there's very little in what we do now as radio broadcasting. There's very little in all the media part of it, the technology and so forth, that hasn't changed. In fact, I don't know if there's a single thing. The microphones are different.
Mm-hmm.
The receiving things are different. We went through this whole period where we had floor model radios, and then we table model radios, portable radios, transistor radios you could carry around in your pocket. And then they they remorphed out again. And now we're being heard on people's computers.
Their iPhone,
we're all over the place.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. But it seems like that's part of what you have to do in this industry. You have to reinvent yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And to both you and me, it's difficult to express to a listener who kind of expects a certain stability of their personalities that basically the business isn't like that at all. You just do whatever they think they want.
Well, talking about the changes that have been made over the years and still are coming along, NPR will be moving to a new building before April 1st of next year.
I remember when they moved to the building they're
exactly.
in now.
Exactly. We were on two floors on M Street, and we were the staff was expanding to the point that you back up in your chair and you bang into somebody back there. And so we had to move to a bigger building. And we are in a building now on Massachusetts Avenue, seven stories. And we're back to that point again where you back up in your chair and you bang into somebody. But with the new media that's come along, the website, the public media and so forth, we have more equipment to use. We have more people to use that equipment. So we have to go to another building.
So it's getting bigger yet?
It's getting bigger.
Wow. Yeah, I think I saw you coming down the hall the last time I was visiting. I think you were still doing your newscasts. And I remember when I walked up to the building, because it was a new NPR building. It was pretty new at that time. And it was a new building, actually, newly built building. And then Ray Suarez was out front smoking a cigarette. And I thought, oh, world, what are they going to do about Bob Edwards? They're not going to make him not smoke, are they?
Well, Bob.
That must have been tough.
It was tough on Bob. He had to go down during a newscast. He would catch an elevator, head down to the parking garage in the basement and have a smoke. And then they began to kick him out.
Yeah.
You want to smoke? You got to go outside. Yeah.
Yeah. So you and Bob probably would show up about the same time.
We did. As a matter of fact, Bob came in just a short time before me.
Uh-huh.
And I would go over to my area and the check-in, and then I'd go over to his office and walk in and sit down by his desk and look at him. And he'd look at me like, what are we doing this time of morning here? And because we both got up around 1 o'clock to get in. And
well, he's a bit of a Southern boy, too, isn't he?
From Louisville,
uh-huh.
Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Kentucky.
That's right. So we went through this for about 25 years, this morning ritual, and we talked about things, here or there or whatever. Just
or not talk about anything.
Or talk about anything. And say, what's on the show today, Bob? I don't know. I haven't looked at it yet. But he's a great guy, and I love Bob. We worked together for so long, and he's now with XM Satellite Radio, XM. And I see him about two or three times a year, and we maintain that contact.
Well, you seem to be pretty easy to get along with. I mean, and so you, for instance, a good relationship with Nina, a good relationship with Bob, mm-hmm. and Sagal. I guess you were saying last night you married Sagal, and Sagal married you. I'm not quite like that.
Yeah, Peter Sagal. Yeah, I'm in with my second marriage, and when my wife Mary Ann and I decided to get married, she'd been married before, so it's the second marriage for both of us. And this is about 9 years ago. Adam Felber, beforehand, had asked me to preside at his wedding in New York. I said, Adam, I can't do that. He said, don't worry. He said, we're going to get married at City Hall in the morning and then have the wedding that night. Okay, Adam, you write it and I'll do it. It was fun.
So yeah, okay, Felber. I was saying Sagal.
Okay. No, so moving along.
All right.
Moving along. We were deciding to get married. Do you think Peter would do our wedding, Peter Sagal? I don't know. We'll ask him. And he said, sure, I'll do it. So the whole gang came down from Chicago for our wedding. It was a comedy special. It went from laughter to tears to laughter to tears. And people said it was the most entertaining wedding they've ever been to.
Man, that's the way to get married. And your wife is a psychotherapist?
Psychotherapist, yeah.
Wow.
And Peter, but people ask, well, how could Peter do your wedding? I said, well, his brother is a rabbi, so we figured that was close enough. But we really got married a week earlier at City Hall.
Ah. Let's go to Penny. Joins the program from Soldotna. You know where Soldotna is, Carl?
No.
Well, you're about to find out. Okay. Penny, you're on the air with Carl Castle.
Hello, Carl Castle. You should have come down here to go fishing because I just caught five. But
wow.
I just wanted to say I absolutely love NPR, and I love your Wait, Don't Tell, and I specifically enjoy your voice, and I would love to win one of those voices on my recorder so they wouldn't have to listen to my voice. And please don't give us a six-pack of beer. I can go buy that myself. But that aside, I think the beauty of your presentation is your eloquence and your intelligence, and I also think the beauty of your presentation is your voice, like Morgan Freeman's voice. You can't get enough of it. I listen to it back east in Boston, and I've been here 35 years, and I think you have that voice. I would say, though, please don't say English teachers don't teach that eloquence as well, because we do.
Oh, I think you do, yeah. Maybe the kids can't pick it up. They don't pick it up, or they don't use it as they should.
Absolutely, absolutely. I see it in writing, and I see it in speaking, mm-hmm. and I oftentimes listen to news reporters that I can't understand what they say, and I realize with my accent, probably sometimes people can't understand me either, but I think the presentation and the way you give it to people makes us want to hear more, so I thank you, and I have no questions. I just want to say thank you very much for what you give to us.
Well, bless your heart. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Alex Hills just chimed in here saying, well, it's great to hear the two of you holding forth. Old radio guys need to stick together. All the best from Alex. And of course, he's the founder of this radio station. It's great to hear from him. But yeah, you know, it is really tempting to just start tossing stories back and forth about the old days, because it's just the nature of the business is so much churn and turbulence in there that a lot of outrageous stuff happens. It just accumulates, and people that you know get famous.
They do.
they're just old buddies of yours, but they get famous. Mm-hmm. They whatever go on to whatever it is that they do. Even the people who did the pilot for Morning Edition that they had to scratch at the last minute and call on Bob to come in and rescue him. Mm-hmm. Even they moved on to great careers and so on and so forth. That just wasn't the right match there. And it is difficult to design something for public radio. Bill Siemering had to had a problem right from the very beginning when they invented NPR, because he thought he was going to have a morning show. And it turned out that all these college radio stations were unattended in the morning. So they didn't have to have somebody to flick the switch to put the show on the air. So they had to do All Things Considered in the afternoon. And that was just the beginning. So they all play classical music. What do we play?
But at the beginning, too, after I joined NPR in 1975, I went there for some part-time work. In 77, I joined the company. All Things Considered was doing great. It had been on the air for 2 or 3 years, I guess, and they were doing wonderfully well. And it was so good that a lot of stations would record it and play it again in the morning.
Yeah.
And so that brought about the way they can do it, I guess, but maybe we should do something and ourselves for the morning. So that's when Morning Edition was born.
Yeah.
And so it was a case of getting the two big news programs balancing each other morning and in the afternoon.
Yeah, I know it was coming. As a matter of fact, when they were inventing that program, I was in the ranks of the independent producers who were producing things and selling them to NPR and working with small community radio stations all across the country, and made a trip to Washington, D.C., invited by Frank Mankiewicz, because I wrote him a letter and said, you know, I really don't think you're doing the right thing in starting this morning show. And he wrote back and said, I never heard. Why? He said, come and talk to me about it. So I did. Mm-hmm. So Johanna and I went to travel to Washington, D.C., and sat down in Frank's office and said, look, you know, all these local radio stations, you just know the college institutional stations, and they're boring. But we know the community radio stations. They all have really exciting, interesting morning shows. And all of a sudden, NPR is going to be meeting production standards they can't possibly meet, and all those shows are going to be wiped out, Frank. He said, I never heard that. And he said, here, meet Dave Cray. He's going to play you our new morning show. You can just tell him what you think. So we listened to it, and we said, it was awful. And sure enough, it was awful.
Yeah, well, you know, for a while there, when we did go on the air with Morning Edition, that knocked off a lot of classical music in many stations around the country. And boy, did they rise up, get that news program off, because it's terrible. Bring back our classical music. But we stayed with it. And finally, Morning Edition took over.
Well, that's it. I mean, it doesn't really, whatever people, this is part of the secret of job security in the broadcasting industry in the morning. Everybody has a routine in the morning.
Sure.
And they don't want it messed with. They don't want nothing to change. I'm sure they hated it. They hated it when Bob Edwards left. Yep. They probably hated it when you left.
I don't know about that. I haven't heard. Nobody wrote me a letter.
Really? Nobody said, hey, Carl, how come you're not doing newscasts anymore? Really? Seriously?
Oh, yeah. I got some mail, and on the road, people come up to me and talked about it.
Yeah. But in reality, once Wait got pretty big, you still needed, you couldn't do 5 days a week anymore because you had to get to Chicago, right?
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there it was. But getting up at 1 in the morning or 2 in the morning? Jeez.
And working till about, the advantages is the fact that you got off around 11:30 or 12 o'clock, and you got the rest of the day, and you don't have people bothering you in the morning when you come into work. So it had its advantages, but with a family like I had, it was a case of going home, taking a 3.5-hour nap, spending the late afternoon or early evening with the family, then going back to bed about 9 to 9:30 at night, sleeping till 1 o'clock and up again.
Right.
Did it for 30-some years. It worked.
It deprived you of all kinds of REM sleep. You know that now, don't you?
That's what they say.
You're impaired now at the age of 75, 78, whatever you are.
78.
You're impaired. So you've got 62 years
in the business.
Man. Mm-hmm. You've seen more of a change than I have.
Oh, yeah.
I remember we had a cart machine. You know, now there's no cart machines, but it was brand new.
I was there before cart machines.
Yeah. I came in, it was brand new, and our turntables were this big.
Oh, yes.
And we had these giant transcriptions. Some were red.
Mm-hmm.
and most everything had to be played off of these things at one point or another.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We had 78 RPM still on the turntable.
We did. then they brought in that little thing called the 45 RPM.
Right? And then we had to put this extra little dingus on the center to make it.
Yep.
Wow. And now you can't find a turntable on a radio station.
You can't find a record.
And it goes on.
That's right.
Then we, for a while they went to where all the music was on carts. Mm-hmm. Now it's not that. It's all virtual. It's all in some computer someplace. Nobody quite knows how to fix if something goes wrong.
And as far as news reports are concerned, from overseas back in the old days by shortwave radio with a snap, crackle, pop going under the background, today they email it in.
And I was talking to a guy at another radio station. He was saying, well, I just went out and did a remote, and it's actually no phone line, no microwave chute, no nothing. It's done like with a cell phone, except it's they have some way of making the technical quality better through these interacting cellular technologies. It's a little thing. It's a little thing no bigger than a cigarette pack.
It took
my breath away. I said, how do you know it's going to be reliable? He said, I guess we'll just find out. And it was some kind of church service. So it was going to be continuous for like an hour. And he said, no problem. Worked out just fine.
I remember going on remote with two heavy suitcases of equipment from one place to another. Set it up. Hope it works. And it did.
Yeah.
But now that's past.
Right. And I can't say I regret it. I mean, I think you lose something sometimes. Things that are artifacts of technology, but a lot of it made it easier. It's just as simple as that.
Much easier.
And the funny thing is that we stay the same. It seems like really probably we should develop new memes or whatever, but I mean, that doesn't seem to happen as fast. People don't change as fast as technology.
It's kind of hard. Yeah. You are yourself, and you want to keep yourself, I think, not be one on the air and then go home and you're somebody else.
Well, you said the secret of your success, Carl Castle. I really do. Arthur Godfrey said it.
Yeah.
Andy Griffith had it.
He sure did.
Yeah. Charles Carroll.
Charlie had it too.
Yeah. That's not an easy thing to do.
You think that the third famous person in my life, she did it also, Katie Couric. She's a young woman who, when I was news director at WAVA in Arlington, Virginia, joined us. As a matter of fact, the station owner dropped me a note one day and said, we have a young woman who's studying journalism at University of Virginia. She's a daughter of a friend of the family, looking for an internship this summer. And he gave me her name and number, and I called up Katie. And she came in and worked with us for that summer.
Katie was the intern.
She certainly was. Katie the intern.
And good at it, I'm sure.
Oh, she just brought a lot of life to the place.
Yeah.
Very eager and very, just one of those people full of life, in other words.
I want to let you finish that story at the other side of the break, or we'll never get it in.
Okay.
As Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Okay, this one by email from Al before we go back to the Katie Couric story. Steve and Carl, I'm a big fan of Wait, Wait. Can't imagine a more unique and perfect prize than Carl's voice on your home answering machine. You do indeed add dignity to this show, and I also enjoy when you crack a joke or use your famous sound effects. My questions are, how do the people get their prize? Do you have some sort of canned format, or do they write out what they want you to say? And is it emailed to them or taped or what? Okay, that's complicated. Let's finish the Katie Couric story, and then go into how they do the wait.
Yeah, well, Katie did come with us and worked that summer, and she came back in the fall when there was an election and also helped us out. She went back to school and graduated and came to NPR looking for work, and we had nothing for her. She eventually.
How can that be?
We didn't know that one day she would sit in Walter Cronkite's seat.
You didn't have you didn't have that much hiring power. You might have had a better
I had no hiring power at all then. And so she finally got an internship at ABC, then on to CNN, and then on camera, and the rest is history. So she did very well. I talked to her about a year and a half ago, and she said, why didn't you hire me back then, Carl? I said, Katie, I had no way to do it. We just couldn't do it. But anyhow, we did you a favor by not hiring you. Look what you did, what you turned into. It's yeah, cool. I know, but I just wonder why you didn't hire me back then.
Okay, so
she's a very sweet gal. And
yes, yes, it comes through too. On the wait, uh-huh. Just maybe a brief sketch of those stories are the panelists have to make them up, right? But they
on the bluff the listener, they are told what the subject is, and then they write their own bluffs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other one was this. Do the panelists get the topic and write them ahead of time, or do your writers do it?
They do it. They do it themselves. They sometimes they're writing. They sit behind a desk on a table during the show, side by side, and some are still writing it as they go as we start recording.
Mike joins the program from Fairbanks. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mike.
Wow, thanks. We do like our public radio here. KUAC. I just thought I'd stick that in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Carl Castle, thank you so much for all the years of experience that you've garnered in radio. I've enjoyed what I've heard. And if you would, in a few minutes, just say, hi, leave a message for Mike. I can sample it for a copy of the broadcast.
You pirate, Mike!
Hey, somebody's got to do it. It's like that broadcast, being able to go remote. People could go do whitewater, just seal it away. Or, you know, climb a mountain, do a remote from a mountaintop, a musical production. I've seen, who's the artist here in Fairbanks? He has the space for listening in the museum.
John Luther Adams.
Yes. Some of his compositions, you could interview him and do a sampling. Just a thought. Stretching boundaries.
Yeah, Mike. Thanks a lot. For you and all the other Mikes, I'll ask Carl to do that. Hi. Leave a message for Mike. Is that, will that handle it?
That'll do it.
All right.
Have a good day. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
I do that, Berman will come after me.
Look at that. It's union rules, man. The stagehand's got to move that ladder. I don't move that ladder. Mm. Let's go to Martha. Joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Carl Castle. Martha.
Hi. Hi,
Martha.
Good morning. Well, I got a smile out of the last caller in his the creative way he got the voicemail. But I don't think that was it was clear enough because there might have been some background noise. So you guys might have to do that one again. But I have a question about the different media. And I do think he was creative because I don't think I would ever win Wait, Don't Tell Me. So I was thinking that there's some way you could do for the best loser every now and then and help them out and let them win a prize. So, but the different media, traditionally you've had print and radio and television, and now you have the internet, what that offers. And with the public radio, was very fortunate to get a sizable donation via, I think it was the Kroc Family Foundation.
It was.
And
It was right after the signed union contract, you'll be interested to know, I'm sure, Martha.
And then also the buildings. I hope that they invested in buildings and bought them and not just rented them, like the new building. Because when you create infrastructure, I hope that they're keeping the real estate. But if you could talk about the different media and what you see, the changes and the influence of internet.
Great. Thanks, Martha. That's exactly my question. Yeah. In 2 minutes or less, what's going to happen with the internet? I said a little bit. I thought, my guess is, we'll still see the need for good writing, and we'll still have personalities. But beyond that, I really don't know.
You can go online to npr.org, and if you've heard Morning Edition and you missed part of it, you can hear it again right there. And that's one of the big things we are doing right now, putting that on, and breaking news is right there. So it's another way of getting the news and getting your entertainment.
So it's, I think most media outlets, traditional media outlets, are basically trying to go ahead with their traditional product and just broaden out the platforms and do it like that. That's what's going on. But sooner or later, it's got to change into something else. I mean, what I've seen in the last 10, 12 years in the news business, in the gathering news business, is that we don't break near as many stories as we used to. Bloggers are now breaking more stories, major stories, than we are.
And we have bloggers at NPR. Absolutely. So, things are changing.
Yeah, but I think it's as we discussed right at the very beginning of the show, if it's really show business. It's really show business, whether you're, you know, the faking your own radio show that you were doing when it was a kid, right?
Right.
or the Lone Ranger and the reverb on the shot in the canyon, like, you know, making sound effects with cellophane to sound like a fire, kindling the imagination through a long monologue like my hero Gene Shepard would do, where he could just talk about his imagined childhood.
He was great.
For 45 minutes.
<I know. laughs>
And have you spellbound. It's like you don't. Some of that stuff stays around whatever medium it goes through.
Sure. But you notice one thing. We don't use the word radio anymore.
No.
We don't say National Public Radio. It's NPR. You call... And I'm sure most stations do this. You call a station like in Chicago. This is Chicago Public Media, not Chicago Public Radio.
Right.
And at NPR, it's NPR.
Right. Yeah, and they're starting to call me NPR. They were calling me PBS. Now they're calling me NPR.
Yeah.
And I keep saying, no, I don't work for that outfit. It's, they're in Washington. I'm here. I'm Alaskan. It doesn't do any good. Your branding is superseding.
Sure.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us, Carl Castle. You're such a good sport.
Steve, it's been fun. It's been a real pleasure, and thank you for having me.
All right. Thanks. Carl Castle with us today. And next week on Talk of Alaska, the subject will be legalize it, whether it's marijuana or prostitution. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Ish Strever on our crew today. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at alaskapublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska, one story at a time.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at AlaskaPublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.